Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Once again, it's Saturday morning. That means it's time to go behind the blue curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Once again, for those of you that listen and follow religiously, we've got my Facebook Live crew. They're in here checking out everything, and they're going to be commenting as we go. You know, and this show is kind of unique because on here, everybody's voice is equal. It doesn't matter about your title. Doesn't matter about your position. If you call in, you don't have to give your name if you don't want to. I'm going to give you area code, the last four of your number. Just press 1 after you call in, 646-716-4621. We'll get you up. You have time to put your comments in and say how you feel about any particular topic that we're covering today. On this show, you know, it's geared more towards the forgotten. You know, the people who always, their voices never seem to be heard. You know, like I often say, we go to all these meetings and forums and police relations forums, and you got your chiefs up there, and they got their sidekicks up there. But, you know, you never see these beat officers. These patrol officers are never allowed to speak. Now, from the blue side of the equation, they represent the least. These are the people who are out there in the conditions with you all. Most of them are good. There's some rogue ones out there, and y'all know me. I'll call them out. But there's some good officers out there who they're caught too because they feel like their voice isn't heard by the administration. They never ask them how they feel. They never ask to come down and ask the beat officer, how do you see the problem from where you're at? And ironically, on the citizen side, you have these city council people. You've got the solution-oriented, always there for the camera preachers that are out there. You got all these people who are there when the media is there, but they don't go. If you want to know about drugs, go to the drug addicts. If you want to know about prostitution, go to the prostitutes and ask them what they think. If you want to know about gang violence, go to the gang members, ask them what they think, or go to the old lady who has to live with the gunshots. See, some folks in the inner city don't wake up to birds, like folks in the suburbs or the gifted part of town. They wake up to the sound of gunfire. They wake up all night long. In fact, they don't even sleep. They wake up all night long listening to police sirens, the ambulance. And that has become, in many inner cities, an accepted way of life. This is the ambiance of the inner city. I'm going to drop a BS flag on that because it doesn't have to be that way. It is that way because we as citizens, the citizen side of me, we have surrendered our voice to people who obviously aren't speaking in our best interest, because if they were, we'd see marketed improvement. If they were speaking for our best interest, when we get in these strategy meetings that are usually held in some church somewhere or a rec center, these leaders would ask you, would you be willing to come speak on this? Would you be willing to come speak on this? So because these things never seem to get addressed, the people who have the most experience seem to be delegated or relegated down to the quietest part. We don't want to hear from you. Or the meetings are held in a church where folks who may have a lifestyle not conducive with a Christian point of view don't feel welcome, so they don't get to participate. We need to hold these meetings at rec centers where everybody has a voice. I don't care if it's the wino, the prostitute, the crack addict, the heroin addict. It doesn't matter. Let these people come in and have a say-so in what's going on. See, that's real talk. That's what I found a lot of these meetings lack. You've always got the church folk in there. You've got the neighborhood leaders in there that stand up and raise their hands, and they go on a geopolitical tirade on what they feel the problem is. But everybody seems so knowledgeable about drug dealing, about gang warfare, about violence in the community. Yet none of them have ever been arrested for any of that. I say the experts on the problem are the folks who've been arrested, are the people who have overcome whatever condition it was that made them get arrested, that said, you know what, I'm going to come out now and I want to be part of the solution. We got to stop saying, oh, we forgive everybody. Jesus forgave me, so I forgive everybody. But we forever hold these people's past over their head because they're on paper. You know what? Paper can be torn up, burned, folded, or shredded. Our politicians shred it all the time. But when it gets down to seeking knowledge and wisdom from people who have that knowledge and wisdom, we defer. We defer to folks who got a degree or 2 degrees or 3 degrees. But you know what? Everybody's got a thermometer somewhere around the house. And the thermometer has more degrees than any man. And all it's going to do is hang on the wall and tell you exactly how hot or cold you are after you've hit the AC or turned the heat on. The specifics don't matter, okay? But we need to get down to, if we want to solve the problem, let's go down into the problem. Hello, police chief, somewhere making decisions. Stop dealing with decisions off of paper. Stop asking a bunch of folks who are going to paint the facts the way you want them to look because they don't want you mad at them. Patrol officers all across this country out there in the street looking at homeless, helpless, poverty-stricken, drug-addicted every day. Gang violence. Drug violence, but nobody ever comes and asks these officers, what do you think? See, this is the side of civilians. Y'all don't know. They don't come and ask us what we think. They don't come and ask our sergeants who are out there with us what we think. They make their decisions based upon what some people with commander stripes or lieutenant stripes or captain stripes, bars, whatever. Those people give a cushy feely set of numbers. That's why you got these crooked ordinances. That's why you got these misguided decisions and guidelines and policies and principles that come out that officers now out on the street have to enforce all the while they know this is crazy. I can't deal with this. And everybody gets mad at the officer, but guess what? Somebody signed that policy. You better start calling your city council people to the fire. If you got a city ordinance you don't like, don't blame that officer. Ask your council person, where were you on this? And he may ask you, where were you on the first and second reading? So it's an encompassing thing. We got to stay focused and we got to stay in tune. And so what I thought I'd talk about today was bureaucracy in blue. The politics, the special interests, the favors, the things that are done that guide or control policing to a degree that you all don't know about. You see it, but you don't know. You know, the first thing I had on my list was politics. You know, sheriff's departments, sheriffs are elected. And you got your Democrats, you got your Republicans. These people run. When they get in there, are they lining up an all-Republican sheriff's department? Are they lining up an all-Democratic sheriff's department? Is everybody who's enforcing your laws as far as out in the county, are they conservative? Are they liberal? And can these people switch and be able to adapt and listen to other people whose political differences disagree? You've got a tight, in policing, there is a tight political influence because you've got a city council, which has a lot of sway with police departments who vote on a lot of the ordinances that are put in place. You know, you've got your city managers. These are people that are selected, yes. But they serve to the mayor. The mayor is elected. Some of you may have commissioners and different things in different jurisdictions, but there is a heavy political influence in policing. And then even within policing itself, you've got more politics than you have policing at the upper echelon. You've got the Fraternal Order of Police who dictate policies out that officers automatically sign to and go along with it, because the Fraternal Order of Police said it. Well, if the Fraternal Order of Police is so worried about the benefits of police, if you're so concerned about officers having the best, this goes out to you, Fraternal Order of Police. How about y'all sit your asses down and write up something that guarantees that officers who do 20, 25, 30, 35 years of combat out on these streets, that see things that would give Freddy Krueger nightmares, How about you guarantee that every retired officer in this country gets unlimited mental health treatment? Because Lord knows we need it. That's obvious by some of the incidents we see from officers who've only been on the street 5 or 10 years. Why can't you sit down and guarantee that every officer in this country that retires gets free mental health service? Period. If we'll do it for our veterans in the armed forces, and God knows they need it, and that system is broke, but that's another story, and that's outside of the realm of what I talk about. Why does the Fraternal Order of Police guarantee, forget the pay raise of 50 cents over here, we want to give every officer an extra vacation day. What is a vacation day going to do for me when I'm depressed? Hello, Fraternal Order of Police. How about you sit down and get with all these International Chiefs of Police Association, get with all these chiefs who got money, their department send them down to Florida or wherever to a resort to a five-day seminar where they probably do 5 hours of actual knowledge and bring nothing back to share with their departments. Nothing. Period. It's a holiday. It's BS. That's what it is. It's BS. So how about you get a mental health plan in place for these officers that retire and get one in place after that for the officers who are working? Hello, police chiefs. Hello, city managers. Hello, mayors. Aren't you tired of being sued yet? Your cities ain't got no money. Cleveland, Baltimore, L.A., New York, Chicago, D.C., Miami, Dallas. Dallas is broke. Dallas is broke. Houston ain't far behind it. And I'm not dogging anybody. We're just going to keep it real. You can't keep paying $5 to $6 million settlements. You're going to have to take better care of your officers. Then, while we're on the political side of it, how much of these community meetings that you go out, you politicians, you go meet with the community, and it seems like you only meet with your communities after there's been a shooting, after there's been a big tragedy, after there's been an explosive incident in your district, now you want to go see what the community thinks. Why weren't you in the community? And then you stand up and you give all these speeches. We can go through YouTube and look at all of them. Chief after chief after chief. We're going to do change. We're going to do community policing. We're going to do, I'm going to go back to my James Baldwin. I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. What you do says more than what you say. People are sick and tired of being sick and tired. They're tired of hearing, having folks in positions of leadership who don't live within the scope of the problem, who never see the problem when the sun goes down because they're never in that part of town. They're at some soiree somewhere. They're dipping shrimp in cocktail sauce. While other folks are out here dealing with gunshots, other folks are out here dealing with gang violence. Do you know what it's like for a kid to say, if you made my school 100% safe today, what good would it do when my neighborhood is hell? That kid leaves out of his house, he or she has to hope they make it to that fortress, that safe school, if we could wave a wand and make the school safe. What good is it going to do the kid to leave a safe school and die on the sidewalk on the way home? We have to look at these things holistically. Politicians, you control the budget. You control where the funding goes in policing. You have a direct line to the chief. You can allocate manning to go into these neighborhoods that need extra policing. Are you looking at instituting community policing? You're the politicians. You're the ones who are going to sign on the dotted line for the grants. Are you actively seeking grants to get community policing? Like you'll actively seek grants to get step enforcement and all these extra programs that are federal grants that we go out and write tickets and all that. And I'm not knocking it. They're good programs. But at the end of that ticket, what happens with that citizen? You got to pay that fine. It's a good revenue generator. If the state is going to pay for me to work the overtime, and then the city's going to reap the benefits of the tickets. And I'm not against writing tickets. I'm just saying, at some point, where do you get into saving some of these neighborhoods? Here's a note for you politicians that are listening, because I know some of you are. Get your pens out. You got three types of neighborhoods, politicians. You got your lost zone, the neighborhood that's just gone. It's just, you can dump all the federal money in there you want. It's like an eyedropper on a house fire. It's not going to make a difference. You got your transitional neighborhood. That's your neighborhood where crime can go either way. It's creeping in, but doesn't have a foothold. And you got your safe zone. You folks in the safe zone, sometimes called the suburbs, you know what? Y'all seen what has happened with the drug problem. you know, the safe zone will sit back and watch and see how that new transition neighborhood reacts. Put your money in the transition neighborhood. Set a ground root there. Get in there, educate people, work with people. Once you set that ground root there, you're going to be able to deal with a whole lot of other things. You're going to be able to deal with issues like hunger, homelessness, poverty. You get to deal with all that. And then that lost zone is looking at the progress you're making. They're transitioning over. You're reinforcing that safe zone at the same time. The people with resources in the safe zone will come in, and they'll help stabilize that transitional neighborhood. That's for you politicians. But as long as we have more ordinances to convict people and put people away for any reason we can to produce numbers, because this is a flow. It's a flow chart that we're doing here. See, numbers mean the courts. Well, the courts are all blocked up right now with these frivolous marijuana charges because somebody's sitting there with half of a blunt. So we arrest them. That's officers' time out on the scene, dealing with all of that, photographing all the evidence, taking it to the property room, doing a report, taking this person to jail. All that time is spent there when that officer is not on the street. And I'm not blaming the police chiefs for this. This goes back to you legislators and you politicians. Add up the man hours it takes the average officer to work a minor marijuana case and what they spend in time. Now, let's take that time and convert it into the courts. Why can't your rapes get heard before 5 or 6 months? Why can't you get a murder trial heard? Because you got a whole bunch of people sitting in there on minor marijuana charges. But it's good for business. It's great for business because it moves us down to number three, the prison system. The prison system in America is probably the most inept, unorganized, misguided prison system on the face of the earth, short of Japanese internment camps. It's not interested in rehabilitation. It focuses on punishment and incarceration. We teach prisoners how to be better criminals. In there is no constructive, very little construct going on. Now we've got the for-profit prisons, which play right into, let's go back to number one, politicians. Who is it that approves a grant or an application for a private prison? Who is it that does that? That's your city council people. That's your mayor. He allocates the management to the city manager, who tells the police department what they're going to do. You got your commissioner's court that tells the sheriff what he's going to do. See, all of this rolls right on downhill. It rolls right on downhill. What is it about? It's about money. So we move from the politicians and say, okay, that private prison would be great because we're going to save some money. See, they sell it to you, telling you they're going to save you X amount of money, just general figures. Let's say it's $15 million a year to run the county jail. Or city jail, whatever it is that you have. So you get this company that comes in and says, I'll tell you what we'll do. You know, we'll build a facility and we'll take over all your stuff and we'll do it for $12 million. We'll save you $3 million a year. And that looks great. Everybody jumps, the taxpayers, boy, everybody just loves that. But then they got these little caveats in there. They'll call it a financial cost or defective personnel allocation. They'll get some big financial term for it, but they'll say that prison has to remain at 85% capacity for, let's say, 25 days out of the month. That being said, now, I am your neighborhood police officer, or I'm the police officer in your area. My job is to make your crime go down. You're working with me to get your crime to go down. We're working together. We're doing a whole team thing. So now the crime goes down. But see, now the prison has fallen under the 85% capacity, so whatever the fine is that's levied, and they'll call it cost-effective, they'll give it some name, that gets levied on the county or the city, whichever one. Now you're paying $20,000 a month fine. They won't call it a fine. They'll call it some administrative cost because you don't have the prison at 85% or higher. So now, what is the mandate that comes down? We need more arrests. Get out there, tell your officers, make more arrests. We got to make more arrests. We got to, you know, get this prison above 85%. That flows all the way down through the police department. It comes down to the officers or the deputies, whichever one. So now they're going out there, and things they might have given you a warning ticket for or simply wrote you a ticket for, they now have to make arrests because they've got to meet numbers and quotas. And, you know, and I've said this before, and I'm going to let you guys know, numbers do not mean anything to the officer on the street unless he or she is mandated under a quota system or an evaluation system where they evaluate you based on how many tickets you write or people you put in jail. If you've got that system, then some people have to adhere to that. But ultimately, that comes down. So now I'm coming to your house and arresting you for things I usually would have said, hey, just, man, you know, don't let your kids do that or don't do this, or I would write you a ticket for it. So now you're ticked off at me. I understand why you're mad at me. Now I'm mad at the administration because I don't know why we're doing this, because nobody explains anything to us. My sergeant doesn't know because nobody's going to explain anything to him or her. Your commander doesn't know because they're not high in the loop. They're out there on the street. And if you think these chiefs are going to come down and explain the whole game the way I'm telling y'all, they're not going to. This is a shell game. The criminal justice system is a shell game. There are a lot of people who mean well in it. Its intent is well, but it is corrupt right now. It needs to be thinned out. Look at some of the sentences we get. Some people, now I'm going to move to my next topic, special interests. Special interest people, we know who they are, privileged people, and they're not all white. So don't everybody think automatically, white privilege. No, you got some black folks getting away with murder too. Hello, athletes. Somebody holler at me. Let me know that you hear what I'm saying. I dare you to get caught with a blunt. You going under the jail. Let that athlete get caught. What do they get? They get sent to treatment. You let that little affluent, hyphenated name kid out in the suburbs get stopped with a little hit of meth. What do they get? Well, we're going to – Johnny's a good kid, and he's promising future, so we're going to give him – we're going to send him to the Betty Ford Clinic, please. But Jamal is done. That's real talk. Now, some folks can say, well, you might be stretching. I ain't stretching nothing. You don't believe me? I almost slipped on that one. You don't believe me? Go look at the facts. Inner city white kids are going to get crucified even more. They're going to get crucified beyond the point of blackness because a lot of times they're seen as an embarrassment. Now, some folks are going to say, well, I don't believe that happens. See, the people who will always tell you, I don't believe that the profiling is happening, I don't believe that abuse is happening, these are the same people who see ghosts. They see the Loch Ness Monster. They see UFOs. They can see dead relatives. They can see all this other stuff that nobody else sees, but they can't see what's right in front of them happening. That's where the education part comes in. If you're not seeing it, you need to get some friends that are going through it or talk to some of your friends, and they'll tell you. But the prison system right now in this country is broken. It is absolutely broken. America has a narcissistic mindset that will not let them look at the prisons in Europe. Those people come out of there rehabilitated. You got guards in there that don't even carry guns. They don't carry handcuffs. They can get along with people. They rehabilitate people. Are there some people that need to be put in jail in a dark place and never seen again? Absolutely. We got some crazy folks here in America. And some of us know because some of them are in our families. But that's just the facts of it. But our prison system needs an overhaul from the top to the bottom. Our court system needs an overhaul. We have all seen some of these cases that are egregious. That are egregious, where special interest comes to play. Some people, the affluenza kid, well, he's too rich to know right from wrong. What kind of shit is that? That's crazy. How can you be too rich to know right from wrong? But they put him on the wrist, killed four people, didn't matter. Where's the outrage there? I know four people were screaming about it to the high heavens. Why do we have, and Gerald's on here, And he told me, I'm talking about my Facebook Live crew right now. Gerald was telling me about a case where it's a brother locked up, and Paula mentioned it to me. He's locked up for, I think it was like a dime bag of weed, and got 20 years. Now, that's crazy. That's kind of stuff that just, that's a waste of taxpayer money. Period, point blank. That is a waste of taxpayer money. And I think, you know, the whole marijuana legalization, we'll do a show on that. And that's going to be a show all unto itself. I'm not going to get too deep into that. But I'm just going to say we're inconsistent in our court system. We're inconsistent in our sentencing. And that's not just state to state. That's even within, for instance, the state of Texas. We can get you 20 years in some places. We'll get you probation in others. And if you walk in there in black skin, the best you can hope for is a year or 18 months. And if you get a fair judge, you know, you might get some probation. But the name of the game today is incarceration. Bed space is money. These prisons are Motel 6s, and they do keep the lights on all night long. And they make money every time a body goes in one of those beds. So there's no $20 bag of weed for the guy that got the, yeah, appreciate it, Gerald, for pitching that for me. So this is another part. So we got politics we've covered so far. We've covered the court system, and we could go on in the court system forever. That's the number four, EBA. That's how far we can go with that. The prison system is, you know, I'm going to get some guys on here that have been through prison. And if you've been in there, 646-716-4621, give me a call, press 1. Come on here, and you tell these people about your experience in there. I've never been to prison. I can only go by what people have told me and a little bit I see from the booking desk. So I'm not going to act like I know what goes on behind the prison walls. I've had enough people who've been in there that have told me about it, and I see enough from the outside. So I know. Paula says it's $7,000 per inmate, and the court gets paid and the politicians. Absolutely. So let's move down to the next level, the fourth stage in our topic. And we're talking about now the citizen cause between the political corruption, the political special interest, the political disinterest. There's some political people that are just disinterested. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to make anybody mad. So they bury their head in the sand while people are going to jail for these extended sentences don't need to be. You got silly ordinances that are being passed that people are being hammered with. And you know, of course, where are these ordinances enforced? Everybody throughout the city is going out and they're looking. But when you want to make money real quick, where do police departments typically target? Low income. Let's go shoot the fish in the barrel. Let's go into the low income area. So now, if you got the political aspect that puts out a silly ordinance, they pass it. The officers go out, they have no choice but to enforce it. It go, you know, people go into the low-income area, enforce it over there. Now we've clouded up our number two, the courts. So the courts make their findings, and we want to get rid of these people. And they had, you know, a half of a blunt, but they make them out to be Scarface. So now we put them into number three, the prison system. And how long are we going to put them in there? As long as possible. Period. So we're going to make money off of them being in prison. Now, what's the cost to the citizens? Number one, your taxes are going up through the roof. Because if you can show that you have abnormally high crime numbers, now you hire more officers. I'm not against hiring more officers. But when you do hire these more officers, now you got to pay them. Now, they're out and they're producing more numbers. These people are going to jail. Then you've got people who can't afford to pay their little fines. So now they get arrested 3 or 4 times on the same ticket. The same ticket. The second time they get arrested on the ticket, this is the second time they work. They get fired from Walmart or wherever it is they're working. Now they go home. They get in a fight with their wife because they can't feed their kids. They can't feed the wife. They can't pay the rent. Now you go over there and you arrest them again for family violence. Then they get out, and now you got to deal with them because they're suicidal. And everybody says, how did that happen? Sometimes the system can make more criminals. Maybe unknowingly, which, I mean, I'm explaining the parameters of some of this stuff, so I'm going to assume the people who write these ordinances and read them and set up enforcement guidelines have to know that what I'm saying is true, but if you came down and talked to the street officer sometime, you might know this. You know, for police administrators across the country, they might look at this, you can get bent out of shape, you can get twisted, I don't work for you. You can call up here, 646-716-4621. If you catch the download, you can drop a message. You can hit me on Facebook, send a message, I'll call and talk to you personally. Because if you're not talking to your officers on the street, you're creating a powder keg. That's the citizen cost. Incarceration, loss of their jobs, unable to pay their bills, and we wonder why we have abandoned houses. We wonder why we have a high housing population. You wonder why you have so many single-parent households. When you're locking up a guy every week for the same traffic ticket, hell, he ain't never home. Then we move down to the crime focus, the focus on crime. Is there any real focus on crime? I mean, the real crimes that are tearing up neighborhoods. Well, you don't even have time to get to your gangs because everybody's trying to satisfy numbers. A barking dog arrest, a traffic arrest, a criminal trespass arrest. Hello, Starbucks. But, you know, these little things, everybody's trying to just get numbers. So we never get around to talking about real crime. Your gang warfare, your hardcore drug dealers that are out there holding neighborhoods hostage that nobody wants to talk about. Hello, preachers. You preaching every Sunday. Do a sermon on neighborhood reality. Okay, how about that one? You don't have to get into police statistics. You can get into philosophical aspects of behavior. But if the good people aren't getting out in the streets, you're letting the bad people have them. Laws of physics say two objects cannot occupy the same space. That drug dealer standing there because you church folks not standing there. That drug dealer is standing out there because you good people in the neighborhood are not standing out there. If you let these stores open up in your neighborhood and sell nothing, the first thing they put in them is liquor to make you crazy so you can strip them down and put weed in them and get arrested. Dice, so you got something to do between drinking and smoking. And cigarettes, that's what they put in there. Everything that they initially put in these stores is put in there in the inner city to destroy you, to make you get arrested, to feed a habit that keeps you coming back to them. Some of these neighborhood stores are no worse than drug dealers. The things they sell the most are the things that keep you addicted and keep you coming back and back and back and back. You can't even get a damn apple in these inner city schools. I'm talking about the citizen cost right now. We're on number 4 on the list. You can't get an apple. You can't get a tomato. You got kids in these inner cities wouldn't know what a stalk of celery looked like. If you dropped, they'd probably try to smoke it because they ain't never seen it. There's no fresh fruit in these places. That guy's there to make business. You riding all the way to the other side of town to get apples, oranges, potatoes, whatever you need. But you don't say anything to that grocer. That you don't say, hey, man, how about you get some potatoes in here? Can you get a bag of potatoes? We do eat over here. We don't just smoke weed and drink. Some of us eat food. And I blame that on the community. That store will do what you dictate for them to do. And if they're not selling what you want, the same way you drive across town and get your beans, and the same way you drive across town and get your potatoes, drive across town and get your cigarettes. Drive across town and get your beer. Drive across town and get your blunts. And you make these stores dictate what you need for your community. That is not the responsibility of the police department. It's not the responsibility of the church. It's the responsibility of the people in the neighborhood to dictate the policy. Now let's move down to the crime focus. Number 5 on the list. If we look at our neighborhoods across this country with crime. Now, you say, well, why is crime in particular areas? Gentrification, my friends. Gentrification. Crime pays. Whoever made that slogan is absolutely right. Crime pays. If there's a particular area on the river, example, that I want, flourish and flourish. Those of you who don't get arrested and don't get shot will die off from old age. Nobody wants to move into that area. I wait 10, 15 years. Guess what? I can go in there and buy that house for, you know, $5,000, $6,000. Once I get three or four of them houses, the majority of the block, I get with my buddy who's got three or four. We go down to the council and request rezone this area. Can we get a zoning change? What do you want to zone it? Commercial? What do you want to zone it? Industrial? And for some of you folks that say, well, I don't have no house. I stay in Section 8. I ain't worried about it. You better get worried about it because you know what? Section 8, that property that you live on, it's owned by an individual or a company. And they're getting that government money, that guaranteed government money. That's why you stay there so cheap. That's why that's Section 8. But when somebody comes to them and says, yeah, look at Detroit. You're right, Gerald. When somebody comes and says, look, we'll give you $50 million for this one square block. All you poor folks that have been living in Section 8 that weren't worried about it, when you saw everybody else's houses falling by the wayside, you better get ready to go somewhere because I checked the Constitution and you don't have the right to housing. Housing is not a right. Good morning, Cynthia. Y'all better check it and read it. And you know what? Trump ain't playing. I had some brothers put the video up of that box lunch or box grocery stuff that Trump is talking about putting out. And these brothers sitting in the barbershop talking about, I ain't eating that, I ain't eating that. Please. Oh, you going to eat it. You either going to eat it or you going to do what I told you 10, 15 years ago. Get a job. But when they show up at your doorstep and you hit day two of not eating, oh, you going to eat it. You going to eat it. That's the same thing most folks say when they go to jail. I ain't going to eat it. Oh, you going to eat it. So for all you folks that's thinking, well, I stay in Section 8. I got it made. All right. When you come home and find out that the man who owns the Section 8 property, the government don't own it. It's an owner that leases that out. When they say, I'm done with the Section 8 stuff, the rules are getting too tight, not because of Ben Carson, because Lord knows he ain't going to tighten up no rules on nothing. But when they get tired and sell it right out, guess what? You're going to get a notice. Find somewhere to live. Well, my family's in. You know, they ain't got no Section 8 places in town. I don't know where I'm going to go. You're going to go where the Section 8 available. That may be one block, 1 mile, or 100 miles away. No one is interested in your convenience and your location. This is real talk. If you don't want to get on top of the crime in your neighborhood and you live in Section 8, you better get ready because when they do a nuisance abatement, like we've done here to several, but we had an apartment complex here in Waco called Parkside. It was hell on earth. Murders, shootings, constantly. The city got fed up with it, and I applaud them. And we went in there, and we shut it down. Shut it down. Get out, everybody. And they fenced it off, and not even the owners could get on the property. Okay, they went through the forfeiture deal. They held that property. The owner ended up selling it. Today, where that projects were, where we were working murders, and shootings and stabbings and you name it. It was hell over there. Today, it's townhouses. It's townhouses. Or they moving us out. They're not moving you out. You moving you out. So like I said, we keep it real on here. We're not going to coddle anybody and say, well, the system is trying to get rid of you. No, if you're not trying to get off of Section 8, you're hurting you. It's a helping hand. It's not a right that transitions and is passed on through generations. And some of y'all are going to go, oh, man, he talked about, you know what? The same folks who get mad because I'm talking about Section 8 are probably the same folks clapping when I talk about white people. So just, you know, like I said, just pull up a seat. It's a big plate. We all got to eat off of it. So now we're going to move down to the last section before I get to you guys calling in. And that's empowering citizens. How do we change this? What's going on, Chris? Congratulations, man, on your engagement. How do we change this? It's easy. For those of you who are in the church, see, in the 60s, there was a portion of the Wednesday night service or a special night where they're focused on nothing but things that were relevant to the community, whether it was voter rights, whether it was registering voters, whether it was upcoming ordinances. These things were educated through the church. And you just easily, you do it at a rec center where everybody can hear. Because guess what? That prostitute is part of the community, whether you like it or not. That homeless person is part of the community, whether you like it or not. That drunk is part of the community, whether you like it or not. See, we've got to stop saving saved folks. We want to deal with folks who look like us. We want to put people on the bench next to us that we want to be sitting next to. And we got to get to the issues. Educate folks. Empower folks. And once you empower them, now politicians become accountable. When the politicians are accountable, the police chief is accountable. When the police chief is accountable, the officers are accountable. When the officers become accountable, the preachers become accountable. When the preachers become accountable, the city council is accountable. And then, well, what do? You vote anybody's ass out that doesn't have your best interest at heart, period. Don't worry about whether they got an R or whether they got a D. If they're not serving your interest for your geographic area, vote them out. And I'm not advocating for any candidates, period, point blank. And he said, well, I don't know about voting. Get with somebody who knows how. If you're not registered, get registered. Because if you don't vote, you don't have any power. You can stand out there and march all day long. The system is not afraid of you. The system is not afraid of me. The system is afraid of us, but we never get to us because we divide because of black and white and Republican and Democrat. And you live in this part of town, and I live over there. You know what? You let a tornado come through. You know, that's one thing about disasters. Disasters don't care whether you're black, Section 8, white, trailer park, living in a penthouse. They're going to come through and get everybody. But us so-called peaceful, loving people, we subdivide. We don't want to get to the topic. Got a caller in here. I know that's Big Gus from the 804. See if I can get him in here. What's going on, Gus?
How you doing, my brother? Great topic
all
today,
right,
and shout out to the whole Grace Media family. Hey, look, it was something really profound that you said, man. We are responsible, and we have a right to our own destiny, man. As the great Bob Marley would say, we have a right to our own destiny. We have to learn how to get out of our condition. I mean, no one's going to take us out. No one's going to put us out. No one's going to give us stuff to get us out. You're in Section 8. The only way you're going to leave Section 8 is you choose to get out of it. And unfortunately, when that happens, because it happens in every major city, especially here in Richmond, they're tearing down block by block of all the public housing. That's their goal, to tear down all the public housing. Now, they're building semi-affordable housing. I'm going to see how that's going to work. How are you going to have high-end condos with Section 8? To me, that's not, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. But that's the goal of the Richmond City government, and it's sad. In order for you to get out of your own destiny, you have to want something. And some of our people get so caught up in living and getting, I ain't going to say getting stuff for free, but getting a handout from the government and not a hand up or teaching us how to get out of our condition. You know, we get stagnant and so used to somebody doing for us, so it'd be third and fourth generation of people on public assistance. The only way we're going to get out of it if we want to do for ourselves.
You know, Gus, I agree, but it's also fair to say, now I'm going to toss a little bit of shade because the government, see, they want to always throw up the single parent household. And they typically point that at the black community. Let's just go and be real about it. They like to drop that trump card. No pun intended. But, so, well, the single black family, that's what makes up the projects. Yes, because you tell this woman who may have a man who wants to be with his kids, he can't live there. If he lives there, you can't have this place. So, see, you can't create the problem, then use the problem as a talking point. Hello, Fox News. I'll call you out. I'm not scared of you. See, you can't have it both ways. Then on the flip side of it, we can't sit and look at generational poverty and not say at some point, this is not for me. I can do better. I want to do better. You know, we can do better. And like Paula just said, you know, there are more whites on welfare than blacks. Absolutely. Absolutely. You can go to West Virginia. West Virginia next to Kentucky is probably two of the poorest places in this country. But we got to get all of them together. I mean, I'm not talking about getting black people out of welfare. I'm talking about getting people out of it. Because you know what? If we got every black person off of welfare today, my check is still going to be getting hit, just like everybody else's check. So we got to get everybody out with a logical program, with empowering people. But we're going back to the politics in it. We got to start out with number one, the politics. The first topic I covered. Then we got to go to number two, where we're talking about the court system that sets people up for failure. Then we got the prison system that teaches them how to be a better criminal. And then we got the cost to the citizen. I got another caller from the 214 area code 5160. What's going on?
How you doing, Stan? This is Rob from the Roundtable.
What's going on, Rob?
I'm just taking some notes. You brought up a great point just really with welfare. And, like, I wanted to just to interject. I think it's important that we remember as communities, you know, that, well, rich or poor, but just as communities, that it's never anything wrong with everybody getting equal opportunity. It's never anything wrong with people who are of color being able to have the same amount of opportunity as people not of color. So when we talk about poor communities, you know, that might have more poor white people than poor black people, let's also remember where we're at. We have to include the history of this nation. We have to include, you know, the racism and the genocide that was created to get this nation. Basically, there were already quote unquote minorities here that were, you know, that were trying to share the resources that were stolen from this country. So when we talk about poor white people, poor black people, and whatnot, I think there's got to be a historical context of who was the one that was struggling the most here, because if they're still struggling, they probably need more help than the person that got back on their feet.
Well, absolutely, but if we look at it in our society takes some people, and once we give you a hand out, we're going to give you a hand up, and then we're going to give you a hand over. See, we're going to hand you over to those who can take you to the next level, but at the same time, we sit and we've grown comfortable with looking at demographics of people locked into poverty. See, that's where I go back to where I say, America has race issues, absolutely. But I think the biggest thing facing America is the cultural conditioning of racism. Some folks are racist, and they honestly don't know it. They'll tell you, I don't like black people or I don't like white people, and you say, why? Well, my family just never did. That's the cultural conditioning of racism. They don't even know why they don't like somebody. It's always been that way in their family. And until we attack that, that's that root. That's longstanding. That transcends just me having a talk with you and you and I changing. You're dealing with a lot of family heritage. You got things like whether it's a Confederate flag, a lot of things that add into that. But America has got to come face to face with these topics we're talking about today from the policing standpoint. Because let's face it, I mean, all these governmental agencies are important, but nobody has more control over you than I do. We can take your life. We can put you in the criminal justice system. There's so much we can do to you. That's why it has to start with policing from the point of reform and change. It's got to come in there. And it's got to come with looking how much political influence do we need in policing. Yes, you've got to have political oversight. I agree with that. Yes, you've got to have some accountability. I don't want the chief to be autonomous and make decisions, because you may have a chief that's an absolute knucklehead or pushing his political agenda or his personal agenda. There needs to be oversight. But that has to come from the citizens being involved and affecting some change. Let me get my brother in here real quick. Tyrone K. Dunmore, my ace in the bullpen. What's going on, Ty?
Oh, give me a minute, man. Just give me 1 minute. I'll be right with you.
Oh, yeah, we got you. Do you want to follow up, Rob?
Yeah, I was listening to you. Yeah. I'm taking notes. Yeah, I'm taking notes right now myself. I get it that we don't need to be trying to point fingers in terms of, you know, well, you deserve this opportunity less than this person because you're whatever color, you're whatever minority. I get that. I think that it's also important, like when you were talking about the police, what the police side can do, it had me thinking of NWA at the time. It's like, well, let's remember there was a movement to bring racist police officers into certain poor communities just for the sake of giving them a job. And we got to be like, I would just say, let's leave the door open for, you know, not just reform on the police side, but like you were saying, let's also leave the door open for, you know, an independent civilian review board. Let's force the community to do their job better you know, so that that way we can have a better liaison between what's going on in the community relations and the police department.
Right. Let me add, this is an important point that I want everybody to make note of this. And I'm certainly not saying this is a sweeping indictment for every police department in the country, but this, you guys noticed this. You need to find out, is your department civil service? Find out. If you have, if they're not civil service, they are at-will employees. In other words, that officer can be fired on a whim. Period. They're an at-will employee. Chances are they signed documents when they got hired that said they're an at-will employee. Now, you can sue for wrongful termination and all that, but you don't have a union backing you up. Now, that's important because, let's say, for instance, for those of us that are civil service, I can go out and write the chief's wife a ticket. Ain't nothing he can do but pay it or contest it in court. Period. You can't come after me for doing my job. That is when you have fair policing across the board. I don't give a damn if I write the richest person in Waco a ticket or the poorest person in Waco a ticket. They don't like it, I'm going to call the chief. Call it. You know, I mean, you know, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, call the chief. I'm not going to tell him like that, but that's what's in my head. You know, I know the chief. Well, that's good. I know him too. Call, you know, you can call him. So when you have civil service, the officers are protected. They can be fair and impartial. See, they're not going to just let the rich kids go home and get away with it and find the poor kids and write tickets. But when you're not civil service, you really think that guy that doesn't have civil service protection is going to go out there and write the mayor's daughter a ticket? He might write a ticket to everybody else with her, but not her. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dave, Waco PD is civil service. But, yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing a lot of people don't know. And a lot of times officers will try to put together little unions to try to get civil service, and the politicians will break it down. Well, you know, you really don't want that. It's going to be this much of a tax increase and this much of a tax cost. It may be. But one of the things it does is it now makes these politicians accountable. If I stop the mayor DWI, you just DWI. Period. But when you don't have that protection, you have inconsistency in enforcement. You have officers saying, hey, I got a mortgage. You know, I got kids. See, a lot of people don't know that. That's why we do this show here. That's why we talk about what we talk about. And that's why we keep it real. I imagine there's some folks that get upset because I say that. But some of these officers, ask your officers in your departments. You guys are listening around this country. Ask them, hey, are you guys civil service? That may explain why you see some people getting away with murder and other people getting crucified. That may be the answer right there.
Right.
So the citizens may want to get with the officers and lobby for civil service protection for those officers. That's a good way to build and bond and build that friendship with the police and rebuild that communication. Sit down with a group of 10 people and ask an officer, hey, do y'all invite them in? Chief, do our officers have civil service? No. Have y'all explored it? Well, yeah, we looked at it. Why wasn't it adopted? Can we explore it again? As a citizens committee, we want civil service protection for our officers. Why? Because it's going to get us fair and impartial law enforcement. You know, so that's something to jot down.
Now, I got a question for you, Stan.
Yeah.
All right. With civil service, if the officers were civil service, wouldn't that mean that it'd be much harder to fire them if they were charged with misconduct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
See, that's the only issue I have with that, man.
No,
that
you
need to get out.
No, I'm going to put my police hat on there because that's not an issue. Because you can't want something and not give something at the same time.
Right.
See, remember, I wear both hats. And I've seen officers where, and, you know, I know we all see these incidents, and I comment on a lot of them. But I should not be apt to get fired because somebody comes in and makes up something. See, the flip side of all this stuff, citizens will come in and make up some shit. I've seen it, all right? And officers have videos. They got their mics on. and they video and find out that what this citizen is saying isn't true, but they call the officer in, rake him or her over the coals, pretty much call them a liar, embarrass them, then finally go look at the video, because some of these police organizations are slow like that. They finally look at the video and find out what that citizen said isn't even true. Guess what happens to the citizen? Nothing. No false report, nothing. They get to go look for another officer, and usually they mess with the good officers. So now, what does that do to that good officer? It makes that good officer who may have gone out of his way to help that citizen go, not again. I'm going to do it again. See, so, yes, there are some officers that should be fired for stuff they've done. I'm going to agree 1,000%. But I'm going to say there's a lot of officers who've been raked over the coals because a citizen's lying. And that citizen is never held accountable. Never. We got the brother that got killed up there at a Walmart. I can't remember exactly where it was, shopping for a BB gun by a citizen who's known to make false 911 calls. Made a false 911 call, said that a black male was walking around in the store with a gun. The officer came in. He didn't have a choice. He sees a black male with a gun and ends up firing, shot and killing him. Now that guy got, I think he got a year of probation or something. He should have got a murder case. You know, but a lot of these, yeah, you're right, Raymond. A false report is a misdemeanor, but a lot of departments do not prosecute these citizens who make false reports. They don't. And that leaves the officers hanging. You know, civil service protection is a great thing. It makes departments have to prove up that an officer did something wrong. You know, an officer may speak out on something that's truthful and tick the department off. With civil service, they got to say why they fired him, and they better be able to prove it. They can't just get rid of you because you're speaking to the public. So it has its checks and balances in it. It's good points and it's bad points, but I'd rather my officers have civil service than not have it.
And, Sam, I have a question.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a question, Stan. So I'm looking at the City of Dallas Uniform Police Salary Schedule per 2017. I'm seeing a lot of 50,000s a year, a lot of 70,000s, you know, well, actually not a lot of 70,000s, but a lot of 40 and 50,000s. I just wanted to get your opinion a year. I wanted to get your opinion, like, how can we bring the issue of low pay scale to police officers, you know, bring that to the table and see if that can maybe influence their attitudes on, you know, like maybe if we paid cops more, maybe they would give a damn about who they're protecting instead of being choosy about it. But maybe, assuming it's not connected to money, but
no, it's not. Right, but it's Rob. It's not the street officer who's choosy. We go to a beat, a geographic area that we patrol. We don't pick and choose in there. We just do what we have to do. Dallas is a can of worms that me and nobody else can even begin to ponder. That chief up there is in over her head. Period, point blank. Dallas is a catastrophe that has been long in the making. I make more down here in Waco than a Dallas officer makes. Why the hell would I want to go up there, put up with that cost of living, and it's no disrespect on the men and women up there, the raggedy equipment they got, the traffic up there, the crime wave they got up there. You heard Nick on the show. Why would anybody? I could go right over to Fort Worth and make more than Dallas. I can go to Arlington. I can go to Plano. The suburban cities make more than Dallas officers. So they've got a can of worms that they're just going to have to dig out from under. And it's not going to be done in my lifetime. They're close to 1,000 officers short. They're not going to get near back what they need, not in my lifetime or yours either. But that's a long time coming. That's what happens. And Dallas is an example for all of your big departments, New York, L.A., D.C., Chicago, they better be looking at what's going on in Dallas because it's coming to a department near you. When people say, well, we want to cut the retirement, these officers make too much retiring. You go out there and put up with 25 and 30 years of this nonsense out here, you deserve everything you make. Now, if you want to cut something, go cut these senators and congressmen to work 3 or 4 years and get unlimited everything. Go deal with them, okay? But when you got to go out there and deal with some of this mess that officers have to deal with, guess what? You earned that retirement. You earned it. And as soon as they cut that retirement, those officers left. And I don't blame them. I'd have left too. but you got a lot of corruption up there. You know, you got a lot of back channeling, and you got a whole lot of problems, which you're more aware of than I am up there. You know, it's the same thing in New Orleans. You got officers down there working for slave wages. And you know, the French Quarter's nice, but the rest of New Orleans is hell on earth. And you want good officers, but you don't want to pay for them. You can't go to a car lot and say, well, I got $10,000. I want a Porsche. That ain't going to happen. You get what you pay for. And it's as simple as that. Let me get Tyrone in real quick. You there, Ty?
Yes, I am. Got a little head cold, but I'll be all right. Been listening, and again, it's keep beating the same drum of the problems. And to attack a problem, as you know, we have to go to the root. And it's like our people are still, and when I say our people, the disenfranchised people are still stuck in the rut because, as you know, the way of getting us out of this is to educate. But it's almost impossible to try to educate people who don't feel the need to be educated, like they think they know it, what's going on. And when you talk about these systems that's in place, the penal systems, it's a matrix. It's a as they call it, systemic, whether you want to call it racism, prejudice, discrimination. It's been handed down from ancient Babylon to this very day, and people are still getting caught up in the matrix. And it is a bunch of matrix. I'll say it again, matrix. It is a bunch of matrix tricks, and it divides us, whether it's politics, different parties, whether it's polytheism, which is different religions, whether it's psychology, the mental effects it has on our minds, whether it's philosophy, the crap that they teach that is non-fact, it's fictional, and then we get fixed on it. And then, of course, we ultimately end up on the fifth P, which is the penal system. So it's a recurring, ongoing cycle. And until we understand the real network, it's a network that works to keep us, to keep masses. And this ain't black. This is just people in general. Keep us designed to trap us in a net. And they're not all that smart. It's just that we just continue to be that stupid to me and dumb. We actually talk about freedom, but we won't free ourselves from the dumb stuff we're still dealing with. We have to figure out the code. Once you know the code, then it's about putting in place a constructive plan that will give us the results we need. I mean, there's no secret why it's called Section 8. Anybody know 8 in the game of billiards? It's the 8 ball. We know what color the 8 ball is, but it's more important than just the color. It's what 8 is chemically. When I mean chemically, as far as a scientist is concerned, there's a scientific code to that. 8 is oxygen. So, yeah, they give you the breath of life. They give you the ability to put you in a house or they can make you homeless. And they have all these rules set up. And, of course, one of those rules was to take out the male. Keep, you know, single parent housing, keep making babies. You could have babies, but it can't be no man there. So that's just a modern day sophisticated way of destroying families, period. Whether it's black, white, don't matter. And until we finally figure that out and then stop falling victim to it, and at the same time crime victim, we're still going to be, you know, beating the drum of victims, you know, the system this, the system that. And I keep hearing people say that we have to. The reason why we keep saying we have to is because we haven't or we have not. And that keeps us on the end or the side of the have nots. Because as long as we have not done things, we will continue to be the have nots. We know there's the haves and the have nots. Either going to be an asset to this world and this community, your neighborhood, at your job, wherever you are, or you're going to be a liability. That's insurance, basic insurance jargon, as they say. What is your liability? What are your assets? What do you bring to the table? And, you know, when you talk about remember, we got to remember. We do remember. We do. Most people do know. But they don't want what we really need is total recall. When I mean total recall, total recall, not little tits and bittles of what you think you know about your story or history, but actually a total recall, because we're suffering in a sense of convenient amnesia. When it's convenient for us to forget, oh, I forgot. You know, it's like a sense of we're having a stroke, literally a mental. When I say a mental stroke, I'm not talking about the physical etiology of what a cerebral vascular accident is. That's how you say it in the medical field. We call it a stroke. And we are still having these mental cerebral, which is called, I'm talking about your mind, but it's not by accident. It's by choice. People want to stay dumb. People want to stay victims. You know what? Because the victims usually get all the attention. You know, you can scream, you can holler wolf all you want, but don't holler wolf, and at the same time, you're still a wolf. Don't act like you a sheep being led to the slaughterhouse by some, let's say, I don't want to say literally a shepherd or pastor, whatever, when you're not willing, not that you're not able, when you're not willing to question in what direction we're going. And I agree with you, Stan, when you have these meetings in these places, what is the ongoing solution to our ongoing problem? Because it's an ongoing problem only because we don't apply ongoing solution, and we have to live it. We just can't wait to the next shooting or wait to the next. It has to be your lifestyle. You have to be totally committed to raising yourself up. Hopefully you can raise as many other people up. In the meantime, we got to leave them other folks behind, because a lot of people want to be victims. They want to cry wolf.
Yep.
They want to get that attention. So, you know, I'm at the point, man, where I ain't got time to be crying for people who want to stay dumb. But at the same time, talking about they want freedom. Well, then free yourself from the dumb. If you're still talking about the projects, which we know is nothing but an experiment, and you see what the experiment, the results it has given us, what is those projects? As you said, there was in there, it was like, I think you said hell on earth or something. So what is that designed to do? So this is a process that we have to process ourselves and then proceed with progress if we're ever going to get out of this mess. Those who are going to listen and apply will be all right. Those who are going to keep denying, well, I have to say it. The hell with you, man, because you don't want to help change the conditions. All you want to do is keep crying about the conditions. Then you stay in that condition. You know, we can keep talking about what people are doing with us. I don't got time for all the excuses. What are we doing individually first, and then before we can even do it collectively? Because we're good to screaming and yelling and shouting. But, you know, when you get things like polytheism, one of the big things in this 5 P's, people are emotionally attached to religions, per se. When you get into psychology, people have this world mind, what we call mass mind control, the effects of that psychology. It's a mental trap. And then when you get into the philosophy, you get caught up in what they teach, again, which is a bunch of fiction, not facts. And again, we get fixed on it. So ultimately, we're in a system that is designed to trap you. And I think Brother Robert Drake said, I mean, they got all kind of rat traps and roach motels. They got all kind of things designed to catch mice and rats and all kind of pesticides, and you don't catch them all. So those who are going to be smarter ain't going to walk up on that glue trap no more, regardless if there's some peanut butter, there's some food. And because they dangle a carrot out in front of you, dangle some money, you got to be careful what you are really pursuing. And we know it's, I mean, aren't we smarter than this? Aren't we smart? I can't question myself, because I was like, after all this time, and everything has a dual purpose, just like you have internet, you have an internet. What is inside of you that's netting you up too? You have the outer that connects the world. You have the internet internally that keeps you trapped in your own little world, if that makes any sense. A net is designed to trap, to catch something. So what are we catching? If we continue catching hell – if we continue to create hell on earth and get into these, as you said, housing projects and these housing developments, how that's a development? Unless they're developing criminals, unless they're developing poverty, unless they're developing the breaking up of the family. It's just a modern-day sophisticated way of slavery. It's just not named that anymore because people walking around here think they are free because they ain't got chains on their ankles or they ain't got chains around them or they ain't got handcuffs or they're not incarcerated in some institution, whether they call it a correctional institution or whether it's a political institution or whether it's a religious institution or a psychological institution or it's a philosophized institution or it's a penal institution, it's still an institute. And what do we constitute in these institutions? What is good for us? What's no good for us? Stop being somebody's criminal. Stop being made a criminal. Stop being maneuvered into criminal activity with a criminal mind, a criminal mindset, and this apathy and wanting people to feel sorry for you. I'm tired of people sending me all these videos, oh, look what they did it again. Did what again? We're doing it all the time. So if you say again, I can say we're doing it over and over again too. Whether you want to call it the Willie Lynch syndrome, whether you want to call it hate on hate, and I'm not going to say black on black. Hate on hate, because hate ain't got no color. We can see that in Vegas. We can see that in Newtown. We can see that all over down in Parkland, Florida. We can see when something sparks inside of you that you will start murdering your own species, meaning other human beings, and you murder them more than just by a bullet. You can murder them by the information you feed them that's choking them to death. But see, they don't get charged for that. But we're not in charge of what comes in our mouth, but we've got to be in charge of what goes in our heads and our hearts and our minds and our souls, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to end on that.
Appreciate you, brother. We're getting down to the wrap-up. I'm gonna go down and do my roll call for all the callers that called in. Gus, you got anything you want to add? 1 minute, brother. Any topic you want. Whatever's on your mind.
All right. So that was pretty deep, brother. Thank you. And I was talking. Always
your phone is jacked up, Gus. Let me come back to you, man. Your phone has got like an echo. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, it sounded like you swallowed Kermit the Frog, man. Your phone has got a lot of static on it.
Oh, man. All right. How I sound now?
Now, that's better right there. That's better right there.
All right. I was going to ask, man, would it be a difference if different departments, i.e. sheriff departments and possibly police, but the sheriff's department in particular, if they would just strictly do deputy, you know, jail work as opposed to patrol work? Because I know here in Richmond, most of them do. I rarely ever see a sheriff deputy in the city of Richmond out patrolling. They do like guard work around at the different Walmarts, but they don't be out patrolling. They mostly do guard work at the jail.
Okay, because I know down there in Texas, they cover a lot of area.
Okay, and they
cover a lot of area outside the city that we couldn't afford to cover. It's not in our city.
Okay, that's cool.
So,
but I'd like to say I enjoyed the show. I really did. Of course, like every Saturday, man, a lot of insight. And, again, a special shout-out to the Drake's Media family, TKD, yourself, Charlie, Robert Drake. And I enjoyed it again, and can't wait till next time, man. Y'all have a blessed Saturday.
All right, brother. Appreciate you calling in. Big Rob, 1 minute, man. What you got?
Thanks again for, you know, the platform,
okay.
Man. Definitely shout out to Behind the Blue Curtain. Shout out to Drake's Media Network as well. Don't really have anything else to add. Great show. You can follow us at facebook.com/GCCPROD if you'd like to follow the roundtable.
All right, brother. Appreciate you. TKD, you got any closing thoughts?
Yes. I'm just going to say, man, it's a shame we keep framing the picture of blame and keep looking at that picture like it's something of endearment or entitlement. I mean, the fact that we're just still blaming others and won't take control of our own lives and making it seem like, well, regardless what controls are out there, like, you got to take control of your life. You have to become a better human being. You got to become a better citizen. You got to be a better father, better police officer. You got to be a better brother. You got to be a better whatever. It's about being better. Because if people don't commit to doing better, we all see things are just going to continue to get worse. That's it.
Well, I appreciate you, brother. Once again, I want to thank everybody that tuned in, listened in, called in, the Facebook Live crew that chimed in. They got their own little conversation going on over there. A lot of good facts come up on there. So you might want to go there and check it out and comment on the links that are up there, some of the comments that are on the link. And also, you can get a copy of the show, StanMason.com. You can download it, use it, do whatever you want to do with it. It's on there. It's for free. Y'all can have at it. And we're going to get another topic up on the hot plate. In fact, I've already got it up, or I've got it done. I just need to post it up because we're trying to stay a couple weeks ahead of schedule. So if you guys got any ideas for shows, I've pretty much got the rest of the year filled out, but we can substitute something in if it's something you guys want to talk about or hear about. If you shoot me a message on a topic you like, once again, you're going to probably end up being one of the hosts in there talking about why that topic's important to you. And just a reminder, we're going to start doing at least once a month a positive show, because there are some positive things going on in policing that need the spotlight. A lot of good officers are doing things that they don't want the limelight, and some of these things come out on social media. So we want to balance it out a little bit, because not all officers out there are bad. There's a lot of good officers out there. It's just some of them are just bound down by inept police administrators or politicians who are out of touch, and then they got the political pressures that they got to juggle before they can even be a police officer. They got to be a politician within their own departments. So until next week, you guys be good. Appreciate everybody tuning in, and we're going to get out. Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.